Welcome to the Child Talk podcast. I'm your host, Charlotte Hartley, and I'm a Science Communications Officer at the MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL. In this show, we explore the clinical trial landscape by talking to the clinicians and researchers behind the work we do. If you're interested in learning how our research can help improve healthcare in the UK and around the world, this is the podcast for you. Every year on the 1st of December, we mark World AIDS Day to show solidarity in the fight against HIV and AIDS and to remember those who've sadly lost their lives. Since the start of the global AIDS epidemic in the 1980s, there has been huge progress towards preventing HIV transmission and treating those who are living with HIV. Now, if they're diagnosed early and treated with daily antiretroviral therapy, people living with HIV can usually keep the virus suppressed, meaning they can live a long and healthy life. But there are still challenges to address. The World Health Organization recommends treating all people with HIV as soon as possible after diagnosis. And while this policy has led to improvements in adults, treatment coverage in children and adolescents is lagging behind. In this episode, we'll explore the reasons for these disparities and how our clinical trials are aiming to close the gap between adults and young people. I'll be speaking to Philippa Musoke, one of our unit's collaborators based in Uganda.
My name's Philippa Musoke. I'm a pediatric infectious disease specialist, retired from Makerere University, Department of Pediatrics, but I'm also the executive director for Makerere University, John Hopkins University research collaboration that is based at Mulago, Kampala, Uganda.
And Anna Takova, who works in a number of the unit's pediatric trials in HIV as well as other infections.
So my name is Anna Takova. I'm a pediatrician by background and I'm a research clinician at the MRC CTU.
To speed up progress towards ending the AIDS epidemic, UNAIDS has set three goals for 2030. Anna takes us through the UNAIDS fast-track targets.
UNAIDS has set up the fast-track approach guided by the 95-95-95 targets. And the first 95 emphasizes ensuring that 95% of all people living with HIV are diagnosed and are aware of their HIV status. The second 95 underscores that among those diagnosed, 95% should initiate treatment. And lastly, the third 95 highlights the objective of achieving virological suppression in 95% of those on treatment. So attaining virological suppression in adults and children living with HIV does correspond to sustained control of HIV infection and overall good health outcomes.
So when we talk about a treatment gap between adults and young people, how is this reflected in the progress towards meeting these targets?
For children living with HIV, the major gap in achieving the targets, especially in comparison to adults, is at the first 95% target. A significant proportion of children living with HIV remains undiagnosed, with only 63% diagnosed in 2022, while the corresponding figure for adults is nearly 90%. Actually, at the second 95% target, we are not doing too badly, as nearly 90% of children diagnosed with HIV are started on treatment. Where the challenge remains is at the third 95% target, where we need to accelerate our efforts. Among all children on treatment, only 80% achieve virological suppression, contrasting with the figure exceeding 90% in adults. I think addressing this gap is where clinical trials on ART optimization can contribute significantly.
I think the treatment gap is involved in two focus areas that I can think of. One is the number of children who are being treated with antiretroviral therapy is much, much less than the number of adults who are living with HIV and on treatment. So the adults are nearly over 80% are on antiretroviral therapy, but children are in the 60%. So that is one gap. The other gap is the formulations that are available for treating children vis-a-vis the formulations that are available to treat adults. More formulations and also appropriate types of formulations that are relevant for adults that may be less relevant for children.
So we know that part of the issue is that there are fewer treatment options available for children and young people compared to adults. But why might adult formulations not be suitable for children?
For the young children under five, most of them can't swallow pills, and yet most of the new drugs that come out are in pill form. So for an adult, it's easy. It's just a different pill. It's a different regimen. They write you treatment, but it's still a pill. While in children, the younger children, they need either liquids. It's actually easier if they are dispersible tablets or a powder formulation or ones that are easily crushed or ones that can easily be dispersed in liquid and then the baby can take it.
And why are there fewer child-friendly formulations on the market?
It's a dollar issue or a pound issue. Many of the pharmaceutical companies look at the long-term investment to produce a new drug or a more effective drug, and you look at what the benefit will be in terms of income. So if it's adults, obviously there are more adults living with HIV, so they know they'll be able to generate the income from all the money they've invested. While for children, there are fewer children living with HIV. So you know that even the population you need to reach, the number that it will be sold will be less. And also are mainly in resource-limited settings who can't really afford these very expensive drugs. And many times we wait for generics to become available, which means the pharmaceuticals are really not making as much money as they'd want to make.
As well as a lack of investment from pharmaceutical companies, there are several practical issues that make it challenging to run clinical trials to test new formulations in children.
One is that the capacity to conduct clinical trials in children is slightly different than it is for adults. And so there is limited capacity, especially in resource limiters, to conduct successful pediatric trials. Two, you're not only dealing with the child, you're dealing with the caregiver and their perception of the vulnerability of their child and their willingness to consent them to be involved in the study. Three, the advocacy in the scientific community is not as much as it should be for pediatrics. I think the adults, there's a lot of advocacy. And I think that the not only advocacy among the clinicians or the researchers, but among the people living with HIV. Now, you won't find children marching on the streets or at conferences saying, we want drugs, we want better drugs, we want better formulation. So again, it's dependent on the healthcare provider who takes care of children to be able to advocate. And I think we're lagging behind in that regard. I think it's critical to have clinical trials for children, and they should be running in parallel with those for adults. Otherwise, newer effective treatments for adults are available. And then 10 years later, you have that same effective regimen for children. And yet we know the children living with HIV are actually very vulnerable. The mortality is really high without treatment. And also they're going to be on lifelong treatment, which means they need antiretrovirals that are safe, that are affordable, and that will be able to sustain them so they have a positive outlook in their life, not only in terms of the virus being suppressed, but also to grow up to be mature, productive adults who are living with HIV but are able to function, just living with a chronic illness.
But as is often the case with chronic illnesses, adolescents in particular can struggle to stick to their treatment regimens. This can contribute to the poorer treatment outcomes seen in young people living with HIV compared to adults.
I think when they're younger, and the care is provided by the mother or the father, it's a little easier because the treatment is monitored if the caretaker is willing. It gets a little more difficult when the child's older and they resist the treatment. They get treatment fatigue. And when they become adolescents, they don't want to be different from their colleagues. You know, I think we all remember when we were adolescents, you wanted to fit in with your peers. So if you're doing something different, then obviously you're less likely to want to take the treatment. And often when you start the treatment, you feel better. So you're like, oh, I can be off my treatment. But actually, it's detrimental to your health. So there are multiple factors. There's a challenge of distance from the health care facility, especially in resource-limited settings where you're living far away. So the caretaker has to travel long distance to pick up the drugs. And so that's one challenge. The second one is sometimes there are side effects, but the newer regimens are having fewer and fewer side effects, thank goodness. But there still are some people who have side effects and they're likely to stop treatment.
Because of earlier clinical trials such as START and SHARE, which were designed and run by the MRC Clinical Trials Unit, we know that it's much better to start antiretroviral therapy straight away, instead of waiting until the virus begins to damage the immune system. We also know which drugs are effective for children. I asked Anna Tikhova about ODYSSEY, another clinical trial run by the MRC Clinical Trials Unit, which tested antiretroviral therapy based on a drug called dolutegravir in children.
The ODYSSEY trial was crucial in shaping pediatric antiretroviral treatment. It compared dolutegravir-based treatment with standard of care treatment at the time. ODYSSEY enrolled children in Africa, Thailand, and Europe across all age groups down to 4 weeks of age. We included two large groups, those starting their first antiretroviral treatment and those needing a second-line treatment because they experienced a treatment failure on their first line. By utilizing a so-called basket design, we were able to answer questions about dolutegravir performance for both groups. It was the first trial in children to show that dolutegravir was superior to the standard of care treatment, providing robust evidence for the international and national guidelines on antiretroviral treatment for children, including very young ones. ODYSSEY also provided essential data for licensing dolutegravir formulations for children, contributing to the availability of child-friendly formulations worldwide. And it's good to see that the global use of pediatric dolutegravir formulations has doubled in the last year, with most low- and middle-income countries now procuring them. It's also very rewarding to see that the real-world studies confirm improved virological suppression when children are switched to dolutegravir-based ARD. We now have completed the extended follow-up in ODYSSEY, which will provide additional mid-term data on health outcomes in children and adolescents.
Once children and young people have started antiretroviral therapy on an effective drug combination, there's still the issue of how to make sure they stick to their treatment regimens and keep the virus under control. Simplification trials aim to find ways of making antiretroviral therapy easier for young people to maintain in the long term. Anna tells us about some of the simplification trials run by the MRC CTU.
The current standard of care is triple ARD regimens, which consists of three drugs taken daily, often co-formulated in one or two tablets. Simplification trials aim to make treatment safer and easier, ultimately improving the quality of life. For example, trials studying two drug regimens. They investigate whether it's possible to reduce the number of drugs in a regimen without compromising its effectiveness. By reducing the number of drugs taken for a very long time or for life, potentially we can reduce toxicity and improve tolerability of treatment. The D3 trial is an example of this type of trials. It compares a two-drug regimen consisting of dolutegravir and lamivudine with dolutegravir-based three-drug regimen in children. The trial is conducted in collaboration with researchers in Africa, Thailand, and Europe.
D3 recently reached an important milestone, the end of participant recruitment.
We're actually recruiting and enrolling very fast. We were recruiting so fast, all the children, that we had to cap recruitment in all the children in order to give younger kids a better chance to get enrolled. So yes, we did finish recruitment. It's very exciting. We did 386 children over approximately 15 months. And now we're going to follow up until the last enrolled patient reaches 96 weeks, so for another 2 years. So we're hoping to finish in 2025, and the results of the main trial will be available by the end of that year.
Philippa also works on D3 at one of the trial sites in Uganda.
From our site, it's going very well. So our site, we're able to enroll about 59 children, but obviously other sites in Uganda had more. But we were able to supersede the numbers that were initially given. We initially allocated only 40, so we passed our target and we did 59. Now, I think D3 for us, our site, it's really been very helpful. The participants have really appreciated the treatment. They're all remaining virally suppressed. We have a good research team who have worked in other studies, so they've been able to really keep up with the children and the adolescents especially.
Another of the unit simplification trials is Breather Plus, which builds on an earlier trial that investigated whether adolescents living with HIV could safely take short breaks from treatment at the weekend.
The initial Breather trial was done a few years back. It explored if all the children and young adults on efavirenz-based regimens can take weekends off from treatment. We know that it's difficult to take treatment every day for a long time, and many adolescents develop treatment fatigue. The idea behind this trial was to assess if weekend treatment breaks don't compromise virological suppression, and if this strategy makes it easier to take treatment overall. So the results showed that weekends of treatment was not worse than continuous treatment, and it was well received by adolescents. Building on this, the ongoing Breather Plus trial adopts the same strategy, but with dolutegravir instead of efavirenz. The trial is taking place in sub-Saharan Africa, and it aims to determine whether the weekends of approach is as effective as continuous treatment for adolescents and young adults who are taking dolutegravir-based ART, and if this strategy can make the overall treatment easier and more acceptable.
The final simplification trial we'll cover is LATA, which tests antiretroviral therapy given as long-acting injections. This idea has generated a lot of excitement among adolescents living with HIV.
LATA is another simplification trial, which is very exciting. It evaluates a two-drug regimen with long-acting injectables, cabotegravir and rilpivirin, given 2 monthly, in comparison with an oral dolutegravir-based three-drug daily treatment. Adolescents love the idea that they don't need to take treatment every day. Actually, one of the challenges in LATA is to address the disappointment of participants allocated to the oral treatment arm. And I know that the team is working very hard on navigating the post-trial access to injectables for the trial participants, and I hope this will be successful. It's worth noting that both the Breather Plus and LATA trials are conducted in close collaboration with researchers in sub-Saharan Africa, jointly led by MRCCTU and Bayer Uganda.
While long-acting injectables aren't a completely new idea, LATA is the first time they've been tested in adolescents.
Yes, long-acting injectables have been tested in adults, but adolescents are known to be less adherent to treatment and also less adherent to their medical appointments. And we don't know how this strategy will work in this population, especially in the context of busy clinics in sub-Saharan Africa. And LATA, by focusing on adolescents and young adults, will provide valuable answers to inform on the best treatment strategy in this population.
The MRC Clinical Trials Unit's HIV trials also benefit from the unit's methodology research, which develops new ways of designing, running, and analysing clinical trials to address challenges like the relatively low number of children compared to adults who are living with HIV.
MRCCTU, with its extensive experience and innovative methodology, is well positioned to overcome clinical trial challenges in pediatric populations. And despite fewer children living with HIV compared to adults, conducting informative studies remains critical. By applying novel methods, we can run smarter trials with smaller number of patients and address important questions effectively.
Thinking about all the MRCCTU's ongoing research that we've discussed, I asked Anna how she hopes these trials will impact young people living with HIV.
Every clinical trial that we're doing in MRCCTU aims to find better treatments which can improve health outcomes. The overarching objective is to contribute to the bigger aim of ending AIDS epidemic and ensuring that this generation of children living with HIV remains healthy for life.
Looking to the future as we move towards 2030, What research areas should be prioritised to help us achieve the UNAIDS fast-track targets 95-95-95 for both adults and for young people?
Yeah, I think the future is long-acting injectables, to be honest. I think everybody recognises the fact that daily pills for life is very difficult, even if it's one pill once a day. And the injectable provides an opportunity to distance yourself from the disease and live a relatively normal life when you just get your injection intermittently. Now, currently, they're every 2 months, but what would be great is every 6 months. They're currently intramuscular, but subcutaneous would be good. So I think that's still a very important area for research. Long-acting injectables.
Long-acting injectables require evaluation of biological and suppressed population. Also, injectables may not be suitable for everyone, and assessment of other treatment options that can make treatment easier, for example, long-acting oral regimens that can be taken once a week, is very important.
The other areas, obviously, implants. These are all research areas where you implant your treatment in a node or a patch, and then you just slow release the active drug.
Another priority in pediatric HIV research is preventing the virus from being transmitted from mother to child.
The majority of children acquire HIV through mother-to-child transmission, so focusing on diagnosing and keeping pregnant and breastfeeding women on treatment is essential to prevent HIV transmission to children. Numerous implementation questions still remain in this area.
Implementation science for prevention of mother-to-child transmission. We know that what works and what works very well, but we're still not eliminating mother-to-child transmission in many of our countries. Also, a lot of qualitative research. Now people are recognizing that it's not just the biomedical breakthroughs that are important, but after you have a good, effective clinical trial, it's important to also know how you're going to implement it in the community. So what is it that we can do to scale that up and learn from that program?
And finally, this episode is focused mostly on treating young people who are living with HIV. But another very interesting area of research is what we call the cure agenda.
HIV cure remains firmly on the research agenda with significant advances in this area. The topic is of keen interest to adolescents, and we hope that a breakthrough is on the horizon.
It's nice to treat, but it'd be nice to cure. I know it seems so far off, but it's really important to invest in the cure. And I think we feel that children will be a great opportunity for starting with cure. You know, hopefully their reservoirs, if you treat them earlier, smaller. And that those are, I think, our key critical research areas.
And that is the end of the episode. Thank you very much for listening. This was the first of our World AIDS Day episodes, all about how our clinical trials are helping to close the HIV treatment gap between young people and adults. Please do also check out the second part, where we speak to a representative from Penta and a young woman living with HIV about how this community play a crucial role in clinical trials. You can find out more about our paediatric HIV trials on the MRCCTU website under our research, studies by research area, and HIV. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at MRCCTU and on LinkedIn at MRC Clinical Trials Unit at UCL for all the latest updates.